This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Looking forward, I hope all people understand that we are inextricably linked to oceans, and unless the oceans can be protected and stay as healthy ecosystems, they will inevitably impact our lives and our health, and for that matter, our economy.
As the author of Jaws, Peter Benchley, put it, you could start now and spend another 40 years learning about the sea without running out of new things to know. This week's guest on Sea Change Radio would surely concur. Richard Delaney, the president and CEO of the Center for Coastal Studies, has spent the past 40-some-odd years on Cape Cod, striving to understand the fathomless and majestic depths of the ocean. In our discussion, we look at the impact that pollution and climate change are having on the Cape's fragile ecosystem, how shark, whale, and seal populations have been affected, and what these changes mean for the area's seafood industry. We also note that Delaney's organization is currently hosting a free online film festival, coincidentally dubbed Sea Change Film Shorts 2020. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Richard Delaney. He's the president and CEO of the Center for Coastal Studies in Provincetown, Massachusetts. Richard, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex. Glad to be with you today.
So why don't you tell us the mission of the Center for Coastal Studies? What is it all about?
Well, we're an independent, nonprofit scientific research and education organization. Our mission really is to better understand the complex ocean and coastal ecosystems and then make that information, that understanding, available to decision makers and actually to everybody, since we all make decisions that affect our environment, with the ultimate goal of providing better stewardship for the world's global oceans.
And what are some of the most pressing oceanic needs in your neck of the woods?
Well, for too many decades, even centuries, societies around the world have thought that oceans were too big to fail and that we could take any amount of volume, like fish, out of the oceans and it would always replenish itself. Societies, even up today, think sometimes we can put any amount of pollution into the ocean and it will dilute and out of sight, out of mind. And those have been two huge problems, but they have proven, scientists have proven, that's just not right. We are pushing ocean ecosystems to the limit. And then there are various other issues that we now are becoming aware of, like we've increased the level of noises in the ocean. The noise level has increased exponentially, causing incredible problems for especially our cetaceans that communicate via sound. But overarching, now it's the one that overarches and cuts across all of those, is now climate change. Climate change impacts on oceans are dramatic, potentially existential, and we're still just learning about the extent to which they are, the climate warming is changing the ecosystem called oceans. By the way, 70% of our planet.
Now, your organization has a film festival, an online film festival, which is underway right now, and it's coincidentally entitled Sea Change Film Shorts 2020, and it has nothing to do with Sea Change Radio technically, but there's a terrific archive there. You call it the Sea Chest 2020 of a lot of feature films and shorts. You mentioned some of the biggest needs affecting the oceans, like noise pollution and climate change. One of the films also talks about the devastating effects of microplastics on marine life. Maybe you can kind of highlight that and we can dive into a few of the other films.
Sure. Well, that is one, obviously. And it is having increased impact, again, just being discovered by scientists, the extent to which not only plastic pollution, which we've known about, and there's been some public awareness about the Great Pacific Garbage Patch in other areas of the world where the currents have tended to accumulate vast amounts of plastic debris that you can see. That's bad enough. But what really is now alarming is as that plastic doesn't deteriorate, but it does break down. And it does break down into smaller particles called nanoplastics or microplastics. And that's where we are really alarmed now because that microscopic size pieces of plastic are finding their way into the food chain, into animals, and of course even to fish that we end up eating in our restaurants and in our homes. So the extent to which this problem is happening is huge. It's major scale, but as a couple of films point out and we try to make aware, this is actually a manageable issue. It's a solid waste problem. It has to be managed in several of the major countries that are discharging or polluting the ocean with plastic waste. But it is happening at a scale that makes it seem very daunting.
So walk us through some of the other shorts and what guests can receive if they're streaming the Sea Change Film Short 2020 through the coastalstudies.org website.
Yes. Well, the main feature, and it's only 13 minutes long, but it's really a powerful video on one particular whale named Spinnaker. And it's a whale that has been entangled four different times during its 11-year lifespan. So the center is one of the things we do at the Center for Coastal Studies is attempt to disentangle large whales at sea, because that's one of the two or maybe three now major causes of the demise of that of whale species. And the film features not only Spinnaker, but the whole issue of entanglement for marine mammals, particularly in this case, large whales, worldwide. The International Whaling Commission has estimated that as many as 300,000 whales, large and small, all the way down to dolphins, are lost every year because of entanglement, primarily in fishing gear, derelict gear, ghost gear, as it's called. And that is really a huge dent in a population, many populations that are already endangered and have not fully recovered from hundreds of years of whaling, commercial whaling, back in the 18th and 19th centuries. So we are featuring that whale. It's a fascinating story. I won't give it all away. I hope people will go to our website, centerforcoastalstudies.org, and register. It's free. You'll get a registration number and password and just plug it in. You can see that. You can learn more about our research, and you get the bonus of the Sea Chest, which has as many as 50 other short films that my scientists and my colleagues have selected as some of the best quality, most informative videos and movies on ocean issues of all kinds. But Spinnaker is a very fascinating story. We at the Center for Coastal Studies have really pioneered this whole idea of sending teams of people out in, ultimately, zodiacs, small boats, to get beside large whales in the open ocean in order to try to cut rope off of them. And we first did this back in 1984 in Provincetown, Massachusetts, right in the harbor where we're located, where one of the first whales that we ever saw entangled was in stationary, trapped, because of the line went right down to the bottom of the ocean and this whale could not move. We were able to free it, but we learned how to do it. And since then, we've pioneered the technique. We've trained teams of disentanglers up and down the East Coast. And now, because it is a global problem, we're working in conjunction with the International Whaling Commission to form a global network of whale disentanglement teams. So I'd urge people to start with Spinnaker when they looked at the CHESS 2020 Film Festival and then worked their way through some of the other topics.
I want to tell a whale of a tale about your kissing, whale of a tale about your hugging too. You got an octopus squeeze when you hold me tight, an electric eel kiss that makes my eyes shine bright.
Oh, yeah.
What a whale of a tale I'm gonna tell about you.
Yeah.
Ain't never met a lover who could love like you, and I know that I never will. Ain't gonna stop you and hang you on my wall, 'cause I know that you couldn't keep still.
If you enjoy the music you hear on Sea Change Radio, please consider checking out Fog Swamp, a musical group led by Sea Change host Alex Wise. Go to fogswamp.com to stream or download Fog Swamp's most recent studio release, Drop Days. That's fogswamp.com.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Richard Delaney. He's the president and CEO of the Center for Coastal Studies in Provincetown, Massachusetts. So how long have you been in Cape Cod, Richard?
We first came here in the mid-70s.
I've spent a lot of time on the Cape as well, and one of the things that I've been hearing from friends who visit or spend a lot of time in that region is that beachgoers are a lot more concerned about shark attacks on the Cape. The reason I ask how long you've been there is maybe you can kind of give us a feel for how the arc of marine life has changed in the 30 or 40 some odd years you've lived there.
Sure. Well, the great white shark story here on the Cape is very indicative of and instructive as to how changes in marine life most often are caused by human activity. Human impacts are what is changing the oceans by and large. So the great white shark story on Cape Cod is really instructive about how people are causing most of the impacts on oceans, certainly the negative ones. Years ago, just 50, 60, 75 years in before that, there was a population of seals, habitat living off the Cape and around the two islands, Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard. And there were sharks preying on them, and everything was in balance. People here, even before that, about middle 1800s up through middle 1900s on Cape Cod, made the decision that seals were competing with the local fishermen, taking too much of the fish and hurting the fishery. So back in the local governments in that era decided to put a bounty on each seal. So literally, people living on the Cape would go out, find a seal or more, kill it, cut the nose off, take the nose to the local town hall and get $2 or $3. And that managed to basically eliminate the seal population here on the Cape for decades.
Wait, you got to back up. Explain the nose butchering of a seal. That sounds fairly okay. Gruesome.
So local governments at one point decided that the seal populations were too large and were eating too many fish, and therefore depriving the local fishing fleet of their stock. So in order to manage that issue, it was unwisely decided to start to eliminate seals. And the way they chose to do it was to say to the citizens of Cape Cod, if you have a chance to kill a seal, prove it to us. You just cut the nose off that seal, discard the carcass, bring the seal into town hall, and we'll pay you $1 or $2. And that was the incentive, all the incentive that was needed.
What year is this?
This started like 1880s and went on to 1950.
So somebody could just be coming in there with a bucket of seal snouts.
Yeah, exactly.
And be like, here, I'd like my $7, please.
Yeah. It sounds kind of simple and silly, but it managed to eliminate the seal population. So when I arrived here in the 1970s, if someone were to see a seal, individual seal, off the shore, it was a big deal because they had not repopulated the area. But over the last 40 or 50 years, the larger seal population up off the coast of Canada has grown and expanded, and they have expanded their population all the way south down here to Massachusetts. So all of a sudden, that original population from the late 1800s has now begun to reestablish itself, as it should in nature, and that has invited their natural predators, the great white shark, to increase its population as well. So now we have that situation which people on the West Coast have dealt with for years, sharks in off coastal beaches, which is causing quite a bit of alarm, but it's also causing a lot of curiosity. Many of our tourists on Cape Cod in the last couple of years have now come not because they're afraid of sharks, they want to see the great white shark in its natural habitat when possible.
And what has that led to these last few summers?
Well, it has required people to adjust their behavior. So whereas swimmers and surfers not too many years ago felt very comfortable jumping in off into the Atlantic Ocean at any time, any season, in any depth of water, now they must be much more calculated and careful about not swimming near where seals are, because if there are seals, there probably will be a shark, to swim closer to shore. There's a whole bunch of behaviors that we call shark smart. You know, just be aware that there is another species in that environment, and if you want to swim there, just be thoughtful and mindful.
And how have the whale populations changed from when you first moved to Cape Cod in the 1970s to today? Where do things stand? You mentioned the Spinnaker piece, which chronicles microplastics and whale populations. And I know one of your colleagues at the Coastal Center studies right whales. So if you can summarize the whale situation, the whale population in off the Cape.
Okay, of course. So as people know, most whale species were commercially harvested right almost to extinction. And then in 1966, the International Whaling Commission passed a treaty was passed that created the International Whaling Commission and banned most commercial whaling. So populations have started to rebound since that time. However, the one population in the North Atlantic that is not rebounding as quickly as we would like is the North Atlantic right whale. And that population has now only about 380 individuals left. Why? Well, two major reasons for the longest time was they were getting struck by ships, speeding ships going in and out of the harbors, and they were getting entangled in millions of miles of line, fishing line, that clutter up much of the coastal oceans. So those two events have been major deterrents to the right whale coming back, particularly here in the North Atlantic. And our research at the Center for Coastal Studies has been all about trying to understand why that's happening. We do know why, but what behavioral impacts that is happening and why the population is not reproducing quickly enough to keep up with those two threats. Which leads us to the third major problem, which is now we believe the changing climate may be the most fatal threat to the North Atlantic right whale and to potentially other whales, because the North Atlantic ocean waters here off New England are the second fastest warming ocean water in the world. It's only warming faster in the Arctic Ocean, sadly, and we know the impacts that are happening up there. But here, the warming ocean waters may very well be changing the food chain. Now, these right whales are filter feeders. They're 50 tons, 50 feet long, but they feed on microscopic organisms called copepods. So they will filter through there with their baleen. They'll swim along the surface of the ocean, ingesting thousands of gallons of water, and then they'll push that out through the baleen, but keeping inside these microscopic animals. That's what they feed on. And those copepods, we believe, are very sensitive to a certain water temperature, to a certain acidity, and to certain other conditions. And as those change, because the temperature warms because of climate change, that is what we believe now the biggest threat to right whales, including now we've proven they used to reproduce, the females used to reproduce about once every 3 years. Their reproduction rate now is more like once every 7 or 8 years.
And that's attributed to feeding issues and water temperature?
Yes, because we believe they're not getting the females are not getting sufficient nutrition out of those copepods, because that population is changing to be robust enough to carry a baby to through gestation.
And is the water warming from the Arctic, or is it an expansion of the Gulf Stream? Or is it more of a general warming in the whole region?
Yep, that's a great question. And it points out the fact that climate change impacts don't happen equally around the world. They happen depending upon local circumstances. And in this case, here in the off the coast of New England, we have the cold Labrador current that typically flows from the Labrador south. I mean the Arctic. We get the Arctic current that comes from Arctic down. And we have warmer currents coming up from the south, from the equator. But because of the warming water in the Arctic, there's not sufficient cold to keep generating that current. And meanwhile, the increased warming waters in the middle of the hemisphere of the ocean of the in the tropical hemisphere is pushing that current up faster. It's easier to describe if I could show you a chart to point to these things, but imagine like a conveyor belt, cold water coming south from the north, warm water coming up to the north from the south, and that is slowing down because of the changing temperatures and causing basically a stalling out right here off of New England. And so the cold water is not being replenished fast enough, and the warmer water continues to come up from the south, warming this part of the ocean in the world, this area.
If you listen to
follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Richard Delaney. He's the president and CEO of the Center for Coastal Studies in Provincetown, Massachusetts. So, Richard, one of the best things about New England is the seafood. How have warming temperatures affected that industry in terms of red tide and other stocks, and oysters, clams, lobsters, etc.?
Well, there's a very dramatic example of that, Alex. We are on Cape Cod, named for codfish. When the European settlers first came across the ocean to discover the North Atlantic, the Cape Cod in this case, there are famous stories in the old literature about literally being able to drop a basket on a rope over the side of your boat and pick up enough codfish. So we are called Cape Cod, and that cod fishery lasted for 300, it still exists, but it lasted robustly for hundreds of years. However, now the codfish have moved. Not because we have necessarily overfished them here, but because they have found the warming waters off of Cape Cod in New England not hospitable anymore. So they have done what we call habitat shifting. They've shifted naturally their habitat further north and further out into the Atlantic in order to stay with the colder temperatures that they need to survive. So, ironically, you know, one of our big symbols of the Cape is leaving this area. So that's how it's affected our immediate fisheries.
Yes, we did a piece with David Abel from the Boston Globe about cod stocks a few years back, and they were showing that the cod population was actually starting to rebound in Newfoundland. So there, and it was kind of unexpected, but it hasn't really bounced back closer to Cape Cod then.
No, not at all. We're losing it. And along the same lines, another iconic seafood, our lobsters, are doing the same thing. They will be shifting beginning to shift their habitat further north to colder waters as well.
So we've talked about the last 40 years that you've witnessed. What do you see happening in the next 40 years, Richard? And why should people care about the ocean so much?
Well, we talked a little bit earlier, Alex, about what, you know, we have done to the oceans with pollution and overfishing and all those human-caused impacts, including climate change. What people should also appreciate is what oceans do for people. 50% of all of the oxygen that people are breathing, no matter where you are on the face of the earth, is produced by the oceans. Little copepods, again, little organisms that live on the surface of the ocean, little plant-like phytoplanktons are producing oxygen for us. The seafood, even though we've overfished it, is still vital to many populations around the world. So oceans, you know, oceans, of course, moderate our weather. They have so many what we call ecosystem services. So looking forward, I hope all people understand that we are inextricably linked to oceans. And unless the oceans can be protected and stay as healthy ecosystems, they will inevitably impact our lives and our health, and for that matter, our economy. So it's of vital importance that we take actions to reduce climate change because, as I've said a couple of times now, climate change impacts on the oceans could be existentially devastating. So that's the big message that I think we all need to take going forward to the next 40 years and beyond.
He is the president and CEO of the Center for Coastal Studies, Richard Delaney. Richard, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
My pleasure, Alex. Thank you.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Lettuce, Winoni Harris, and Traffic.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.